Mr. Terry Boyne, Rear 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Boyne?
I was born in St. John's Wood. I've never been back, and I was only there a few years.
And what was your date of birth?
It was 10th of July, 1924.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background? How many there in the family? What your father did for a living?
I was the only child, so that makes it easy, doesn't it? My father, in his early days, he was a bus conductor at one time. My mum and dad moved to Ealing, in fact, not many roads from here, really. So I must have been about 3 when I came here. So prior to that, I've got no knowledge at all. I've got no knowledge of my grandparents, or any of that sort of background. It's all blank to me. But in later years, my father was a lorry driver. And my mother was a bookkeeper, and we lived, as I say, in Ealing, right there, and that's where I spent all my early years of my life, really.
And what about your education?
I attended a local school here, again in Ealing, called Ealing Lane School, believe it or not, and it's still going. And I went through the infant, junior, senior sort of school there.
Was there any particular subject you were interested in, or were good at, or bad at?
Art, I think, was a drawing and art. I did very quite well at that. I must admit, I enjoyed it. Like all subjects, you enjoy, you do well at. Maths and English were a drag, you know, and that goes for most, I think. But
do you have an interest in sport?
Yes. Played for the school team and football and all that. But that was quite a big thing. Sports days and the football matches.
What about were you a member of any of the boys' things? Boys' brigade, Boy Scouts, anything like that?
No.
Any particular hobbies?
I used to like making model airplanes. And my hobby, really, I used to spend a lot of time just drawing.
You'd be leaving school about
14 and a half, I suppose, when I left.
So 1938?
38.
Right. And what did you plan, or your dad plan, for you to do when you left school?
Oh, well, I really would have liked to go in a drawing office. So on leaving school, I went to night school to try and back up on what I needed for that.
Which one?
Acton, Acton Tech.
And were you working as well?
Yes, I started in an office, in fact, Stanford's, they're map makers at Longacre. I think they're still there, believe it or not. In the general office, and hoping to get onto the drawing side of the maps, and that never really came about because the war had bubbled up by then in 1939.
Now, were you aware, as a you're only a young lad, were you aware of Hitler, Nazi Germany, approach of war during the 30s at all, or was it just?
No, not really. It glosses all over you, really. I mean, the newspapers are full of it, the radio is full of it, but. The real implications of it all, I don't think, registered too much. Not really.
And what about the actual outbreak of war? Did you hear the broadcast?
Yes, I did. A friend of mine, the siren went off, didn't it, on the day? And I was at a friend's house, it wasn't a house, it was a pub. His parents run the pub. I was up there at the time, and we heard the actual Chamberlain speaking on the radio up there, and then the siren went off, so I started walking home, and everybody was out on the front doorstep all the way down the road, all looking up. Lord knows what they thought they were going to see, but it sort of set everything going, you know, on that and the all-clear sort of followed it fairly quickly. I never did know what triggered it off. I think there's a lot of false alarms, somebody at the back.
How did you feel about war? I mean, you were far too young to be in there, but I mean, did you think it would involve you, or did you worry about it? Or?
God, I was pretty worried. I don't think I was worried in any way. My father was in the army in the First World War. He was in the Middlesex Regiment, so he could talk about warfare as it was then.
Had he warned you off it, or was he for it? I mean, you know.
No, not at all. No, he didn't warn me off of it. If I'd had a preference, I would have gone in the Air Force. I was keen on aeroplanes and used to. One of our friends, rather, his father had a car. I mean, talk about wealth. I mean, and he used to take us to Hendon Air displays. They were fascinating. 37, 38 Hendon Air displays. And also Northolt, which is very close here. I used to go over there when I had open days. And you could wander around and see these different things that they got up to. They were quite interesting. And if anything took my bias, it would be towards the Air Force.
Now, did the outbreak of war affect your work at the MAP office?
Yes. MAP-wise, of course, there was quite a turmoil because, obviously, maps virtually couldn't be sold. They were engaged in all sorts of strange map-making projects, I guess. The head of the Stanford was a lieutenant colonel in the Royal Force Artillery, I think, and he disappeared almost day one. But it did have a quite dramatic effect on the printing side and the rest of it. Because of that, I left there and went to Pullins, which is an instrument maker's just down on the back of the show.
Again, as an office boy?
No, I went in the machine shop there.
As a
Turner lathe machines.
What made you do? I mean, just was there no other job? Or
did no, I just as the map sort of side was sort of closing in, as it were. I thought I'd do something more useful, perhaps, and it was local.
And when did you start that, roughly?
39, I guess.
Or almost immediately. Yeah. Mm. And you carried on there?
Yes, till I was received calling up papers in 42.
Now, what other effects of the war? Did you consider, went in May 40, did you consider joining the LDV or the Home Guard?
No, I was still too young in 40. I mean, I was 16 then.
Even for the LDV?
I was in the Air Cadets, so I did join the Air Cadets.
What about them? Where did you go with them?
A local. In fact, it was mostly at the school that I just recently left. They used to sort of have meetings and the rest of it.
And what sort of activities did you do with the Air Cadets?
Well, map reading, navigation sort of talks, just general, really. They didn't even try to get us to march, but I mean, that was a waste of effort, wasn't it? In many ways.
So it wasn't that?
Well, intense, no, far from it, but it was interesting that somebody would come along and talk about engines and propellers even and stuff like that, and the guns and the rest of it.
So mainly lectures and
lectures,
talk.
Yes, it was.
Anything else you were doing? What about the Blitz? Much impact in your area, Ealing?
Around here, well, there was quite a few bombs dropped down here. In fact, one not more than about a few hundred yards away, sitting now. It's just over on that corner. When you came down the hill, you passed the little petrol station. One landed there, just down the road here. Another one landed about the road from where I lived, a little way away. great distance away. I believe there was a landmine drop. We evacuated this boat at one time. And the Blitz itself, we have to go down the shelter at night, same as most, I guess.
What was your air raid shelter? Was it? What
it was a shelter that was buried in, semi-buried in the garden where I lived.
What was it like?
Cramped. Could be cold, damp, I guess. Wet, yes, which is what we used to get in. But like most places, they try to make it as comfortable as possible with, I don't know, bits of wood. And they were what they were. I mean, they just... You were just sort of semi-buried, I guess. When the all clear sounded, invariably you'd come up and go to bed because you'd get comfortable in bed. But some nights you're up and down like a fiddler's elbow.
You always went out. You didn't stay in.
Initially, yeah, in the early days, and you stayed out there by the shelter, and you could see the searchlights, and you could hear the German bombers had this funny old beat. You could hear them sort of fooling about over the top on the way up to the docks or whatever. And when the Indian aircraft guns were fired, you could hear shrapnel sort of coming down, pattering about in places. And you could find them in the street as you walked around, you know, little bits of metal. But it didn't, after a while, the novelty of that ceased to sort of be a novelty. The siren went and off you trotted down the garden. Yeah. And everybody was standing out with your neck crane looking up. But it was just, and it gradually faded away. It wasn't so intense after a while. The dogfights, I suppose, in the 40s, you could see the you can watch those from time to time. And of course, Northolt, they were driving from here with the Polish squadrons for London, I guess. They used to be up and about. But generally, you think to sort of get into a rhythm or a routine, as good or bad as it is, it's part of your routine. That work, when the siren went, you used to have to shut the machines down and go into the shelter. Quite a number of them used to enjoy that because they just go and play cards. But and on the radio, when the news used to come through that so many German planes shot down, we used to keep a blackboard out with the number up, you know, and it try to see it go up and up and up. That was quite a little morale booster, I suppose. But funny enough, some of the machine parts and things that we were working on were the bomb sites for the aircraft. It was a nice little workplace.
What about rationing, food rationing for the rest of it? How did that affect you?
Do you know, I don't know how people manage with it. I never went without, and I'm sure not many people did somehow, because your mum, the mums would make something out of nothing, and quite honestly, I can't honestly say I ever felt hungry, ever. There was always something, regardless, and no matter where you went, quite honestly, but how it was achieved or how they managed it, I will never, ever know. And you won't have the opportunity to ask them either how they did it, I'm sure.
Now, anything else before you were called up? Do you remember the call-up procedure? And that was 1942. When about in 42? Early or late?
Well, that was late, 42. The big brown envelope arrived. And it said that I was to report to Invicta Barracks, I think it was Invicta Barracks in Maidstone, hospital was Kent's, of course, and it was on the 18th of December, 42.
Now, that was infantry. Had you ever had a, had you had any chance to join the RAF, or had they, you know, had you been given any sort of choice at all?
No, I went up for a medical, and again, I'll put the preference down for that, but. Regardless of what I might have got across at that point in time, the paper still said Invicta Barracks at Royal Kent.
How did you feel about that?
Mixed apprehension, I suppose. Bit of a buzz. It was something different, something new.
How about your parents? How did they react?
My mother, being the only child, I guess. My dad sort of took it. If you took it hard, he never showed it, shall I say that. But my mum, I'm sure she was pretty badly rocked by it, for obvious reasons, you know.
Now, so you went to Invicta Barracks, that's where you were to do your basic training. Did it have a name, the training centre, number 4 or number 6 or whatever?
Not to my knowledge, it was we were in the main barracks, new intake, and like all new intakes, you went through a lecture to tell you what was going to happen. The 6 weeks were going to be split up. They were going to teach you to walk, you know, all the usual. A typical, I suppose, army that the 6 weeks you spent hurtling about. You were always in the wrong kit, no matter what the hour was. Whatever you had on was the wrong thing to what was coming up. So you jumped from gym stuff into full kit, from full kit to gym stuff.
What about they brought you in? What about kitting out? Do you remember that at all?
Yeah.
Do you remember what they gave you? What do you?
Yeah, you just formed a great queue in a quarter miles of stores, and it came across a counter. Because the big joke was, if it fitted, you had to be deformed, you know, I mean, if you, but, it came up, you got that uniform, a great coat, and then all the little equipment, housewife, mess tins, it all came up, a big heap, you finished up with this enormous sort of heap, toppling about with it all, trying to keep it all together, and strangely enough, that first great coat was the best great coat I ever had. It actually fitted. That's why everybody said you had to be deformed, you know, for it to fit. But people used to borrow it for guard duty because it really had a lovely cut to it. Don't ask me why, but it really was a good one.
And what about haircut, things like that?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty fierce. I remember about a week before I was due to go, I had a haircut from the dad. I remember the father saying, well, that won't last long. And I thought I was doing the right thing going in with the hair trim, but and it didn't. It didn't last long. Zip, it all came off, and you sort of sat in a chair, and it was all around you, you know. but everybody was exactly the same, if you know what I mean.
Now, what were the other recruits, conscripts, call them what you like? What were they? What were they all the same sort of background as yourself, or what? How did this strike you?
Generally, we were apprehensive. Some were quite pleased to be in it. One or two could take to it so easy. And the one character that I do remember well, they used to take us up onto the hill digging slit trenches up on the chalk. And the most of us started off at high rate of notch, you know, where he went at it at a slow pace. First and foremost, he sharpened the spade with stone. And I wonder what he was up to, you know. But, well, long after we burnt ourselves out, he was still plodding on, and he just paced it. But he was a road digger by trade, if you know what I mean. His early days were spent digging roads and the like, so he learnt that craft, if you like to call it, the hard way. And there was a lesson learnt there, that's for sure.
Was there any from better back? I mean, not better, but richer backgrounds than yourself, isn't it?
I don't know. It never comes up. In that 6 weeks as you're lumped together, you really, you don't have much time anyway. you're either dashing here, dashing there. It really is, they don't give you time to stand and chat a lot. Really.
So you're all much of a muchness to you?
Yes, all better with similar age. Yeah, that's for sure.
What about the barracks? Was it an old barracks or huts, yeah, or what?
It was an old barracks.
What was the room like?
The usual big dormitory with a landing with the wash facilities, toilet facilities, all on the one landing. The landing split to the left and right, sort of slowly come up the centre, and the dormitory sort of moved off from that.
What about the beds?
Just a single bed. If they were uncomfortable, I wouldn't know because she slept sound. I thought you out during the day, you would have slept on anything, I think.
Did you have to clean the room out?
Oh, yes. That was part of this cleaning sort of business in those sort of places is quite emphatic. It's got to be done to certain standards, and everybody's got to pitch in to do it, you know.
What about preparing your kit for kit inspection? I mean, was there any new way? I mean, because they've got ways of cleaning your boots and your webbing and your buttons and things like that. Who told you that? And did you actually get down to it? Or
the room had a corporal allotted to it, and he would show you how to lay the kit out. The blankets had to be folded to put on the bed. And all the little bits that go with it. He showed you how to clean this and clean that. And it was, he was like a father figure, I suppose, slightly older than most of us, and he'd been in a fair while. But no, they did give you a fair bit of instruction on it, I guess.
Did you mind all that sort of bulk?
No, I didn't mind it. I didn't see the point of it, I must admit, but you never ever do you, I guess? And cleaning webbing and stuff like that is, you can find better things to do, I'm sure, but that's the standard that they wanted, and that's the standard you had to achieve. And if it wasn't achieved, then you all had to go back and do it all again, you know?
Did you have this business of laying your kit out in a certain manner?
Oh, yes, very much so. Absolutely. It all had to be exact to that pattern, you know, that was shown.
If we look at a sort of typical day, there is no such thing, I know, but to look at bits and bobs of your training and how the day worked out, what time would you get, roughly, would you get up and what would you do? You know, what was the first bit of the morning then?
I suppose we'd be about 6:30. You'd be up, washed, shaved. They would tell you what kit you wanted for first parade, breakfast. You never prepare some of your breakfast.
Now, let's have a look at food then while we're at it. What was army food like to you?
Well, initially, it came as not a shock. It wasn't what you were used to, obviously. But there was generally plenty of it. And once they got you running about and exercising and the rest of it, you would have eaten anything and eat it all. You found an appetite that, quite frankly, I don't think I've ever had before or since, you know. But that's all part of the plan, really, of this fitness. And
so there was enough of it, but what was the quality like? You know, I mean,
wasn't bad. It certainly wasn't five star, you know. I mean, but it wasn't bad. You could get through it. I mean, porridge in the morning, and then bits and bobs. there was a big background to tell you that you could help build software trees for some.
What about?
I never found the food that bad, but generally, as it wore on, you either got used to it and you were prepared to eat it. You were always hungry, that's for sure.
So looking at some of the you know, you got, then you'd have first parade. Let's say PT first. What were the PT drills like, and did they do you any good? Did they actually improve your physique?
Oh, sure they did. Yes, I'm sure they did. Yeah, there was an awful lot of running about, climbing ropes, mini assault courses really that made you jump and bolt, and then there were team games as it were to get you to run and all the rest of it with the ball, and it was to get you breathing up, I suppose. I can truly say that I was as fit as I've ever been by the end of that 6 weeks, and most people would probably say the same.
So it worked on you.
It did work on me, yeah.
What about route marches? Do you go on them?
Yes, oh yes.
What were they like?
They were quite good really in many ways. You'd start off once you had to be like a marching standard when you left the barracks, and then you could then march easy. And they took you into the woods, and quite pleasant, really, in some ways. Then you had to sort of smarten up as you come back, but you could sing, you could talk.
What would you sing? I mean, were they still using the old First World War songs, or did you have your own?
Oh, bless them all, and all of that usual sort of. With a choice of words that you wouldn't use today, I guess, but nevertheless. It was quite a happy time, really.
Any response from any villages or anything you went through? I mean, would people...
No, the Mason's quite built up, you know, and they've always had soldiers there, you know, a few more squadrons didn't make much difference.
Cross-country runs, you're doing anything?
Yeah, that's got a feature great in these things, isn't it, although everybody out there are in the shout and getting you on. But
how tough were the runs?
Pretty hard. You'd had enough by the time you got back, that's for sure.
About how many miles?
Oh, probably 8, 10. Yeah. That's what we said. But it isn't a race, but you plod on the other.
Would you walk and run, or would you just run?
You'd run and then have a walk. You'd break it up a bit. Most of us would. The old clever clubs would probably jog some of it, but most of us would have a little burst. With somebody on it, you'd have another little burst.
And where would you come in? I mean, would you be looking to be in the top 10, or just settle in the middle?
Settle in the middle, I guess. That's where the bulk were in the middle.